Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it.
Well, good morning again here on Circles of Change. Of course, we're in mid-September with the fall weather upon us. And, you know, back in mid-August, some of you more frequent listeners may have caught up with the fact that two weekends in a row, I ran best of shows, which is code for reruns, something that really I've never done in the 6 years we've been on the radio, because whenever I travel on business or pleasure, I usually scramble with my guests to do pre-records, and then we wire everything together without, hopefully, your ever knowing that I'm really not here live. Well, that's a combination, I'll have to admit, of my commitment to actually offer you fresh content every week, but also with this being a brokered show and my paying for the time and then convincing sponsors and broadcast partners to help defray the cost, it's also a clear reflection of my upbringing. In other words, to not waste any resources. Or maybe some might say I'm a bit too cheap to let that opportunity not have maximized the outcomes. Well, that, and I will say, being blessed, or maybe cursed, by an amazing work ethic to keep my head down and move forward relentlessly on whatever mission I am on. And in fact, that mission is a direct reflection of my parents, and in specifically my father, David Rolfes. So I must say, why the best of those two weekends, and like I said, reruns, and the tie to this work ethic? Well, my three brothers, Mark, Paul, and David, and I were in Chicago area that time for 8 days. Together, it was our fourth extended rendezvous in 4 months to be with our father for his final laps around this racetrack of life. And for those of you who have or are traveling with your elders right now, you know, there are no two journeys alike. And I mean the journey not just for our loved one as they move forward, but as well for those of us entrusted with this amazing opportunity to participate in whatever it plays out with them. I have to say, what a profound series of visits that my brothers, our spouses, and some of the grandkids had since last April. And now with my dad being on the other side of the bridge, the four of us siblings in particular, really gifted with even stronger glue between us. In other words, truly a recognition, a reverence, and a gratitude for everything that my dad did for us. And I think I wanted to share today, it's that tense, I don't think it's did for us at this point, but continues to do for us. My younger brother, David, and I, in fact, we were the ones that were blessed to be on the night shift and actually holding my dad when he took his final breaths at 5:45 a.m. that Friday morning, August 16th. And, you know, it was just like him, who always woke up and started his day at 6 a.m., that he would choose instead to leave 15 minutes early, which I share with David. Well, these 6 weeks, I have to tell you, since that event played forward, I've had plenty of life distractions to keep me going, but yet I can't tell you how many times I've caught myself reaching for the phone to place yet what would have been a routine call to my dad back in the Midwest. But, you know, I don't have a number to dial anymore. So one of the reflections that put me over the edge to do my first radio show back in 2008, many of you might recall who have listened to our show, is actually connected to this phone thing. A fellow consultant and I were ruminating on how to take our businesses to the next level. And he said, you know, if I could only meet and talk with people at Starbucks more often, I know I'd make a lot of money and a lot more fun. And he went on, actually, to host a series of community business leader meetings and indeed did net some pretty high-quality clients in the process. That was his version of a bigger form of Starbucks, I think. Now, my response during that call was, right, you know, that's like me. I could talk on the phone all day long. And we both kind of chuckled about it, but I also felt kind of something clicked in my head, so I wrote it down on a card. And it wasn't so long afterwards that my husband, Ted, came in the office and said, they're advertising on the air. Bring us an idea. We'll put you on the radio. And so those two connections really cemented my stepping up and saying, I could do that. Well, you know, I'm not sure exactly where that comment of I could talk on the phone all day long came from or why the timing, other than perhaps I was once recognized as the voicemail queen within my company, given my often long-winded and hopefully informative messages. But really, talk radio is just that. It's a conversation over the phone, either here or live in the studio. So today I have my dad's picture in front of me, and this is my call to him because I know that he's listening. So let me retell a couple stories. My father, Dave, he's a native of Racine, Wisconsin. He grew up amidst very hardworking, working-class immigrants of German predominantly and French descent. His dad was eventually in the automotive parts business at the local Chevrolet dealership. But I found out later in life that age 16, he actually had lied about his age so he could work on the vehicle assembly line. In fact, his job was to spit nails and then hammer them into the wooden instrument panels of the cars back then. You know, I never knew this, though, until I was well into my own career as an engineer and, wouldn't you know, working for Chevrolet. My dad graduated from high school. He then joined the U.S. Navy, serving eventually in the Korean conflict and then the reserves until well into his 60s, and eventually got his electrical engineering degree from Marquette University. Dad joined General Electric Medical Systems when it was basically first started up, a highly profitable sector of General Electric, and he built his career then in high-end technical sales, following X-ray all the way up to CAT scanning and nuclear magnetic resonance equipment. Some of my memories, of course, as a child, he was always there to help me with my homework, and particularly my math homework. And in fact, I can't tell you how many times I recall him teaching me some inside tricks like vector analysis that would absolutely confound the teachers the next day when I would come in and be able to rapidly get to the answer at that time. So always giving me some inside scoop. My dad and mom always made sure that the four of us kids had an allowance. But then he turned right around and he served as the bank, complete with us each having our own passbooks so that we could invest a portion of it back with him and actually earn interest. You know, mom and dad eventually then bought me a car when I turned 16, quite by surprise, something I hadn't asked for. It was a 1965 white Ford Mustang, white exterior, red interior. And of course, we lived in Indianapolis and the Indy 500 was a very prominent annual event. So the car world was alive and well there. And although there was a slight catch that I found out the next day after I got the keys, because it suddenly hit me, I now had the responsibility of chauffeuring my brothers to all of their extracurricular events, not just myself. Also, there was a hook because Dad said he was going to charge us 10 cents for every mile that we put on the car, which certainly taught us the value of owning a car pretty quick, but it also put us on a path of setting up quite a logbook system that we kept in the glove box so we could track whose trip this was going to be charged to and prorate it in some fashion. I didn't know as well there that you could hire people to fix things at your home when something went wrong. Because, you see, my dad was a consummate putzer, is what he called it. In fact, he never referred to that household tedium as work. It was more a hobby and a release. And we were scooped up right in that process to learn. Yes, I helped re-roof the house or fix the car. And as you might expect, no surprise, I never knew that girls didn't love math and science or couldn't pursue engineering school. On the flip side, I would tell you that today, all three of my brothers are fabulous cooks, and they're just as apt to pick up and do the dishes, by the way, which was a task that I did my best to circumvent. So, yes, you can suspect I was quite a tomboy. But again, I wouldn't know that girls couldn't go do the kind of things I then have had the advantage of diving into all my life. I was originally on a track, I thought, since I was a young child, of going to art school. But one day in junior, when I was a junior in high school, my dad, I could still see him at the table asking, "Did you ever think of becoming an engineer?" And I have to say, I remember with great favor how I used to go into the office with my dad as he was putzing around at the GE Medical Systems office, usually back in the shop doing something with your X-ray equipment. And wouldn't you know, where was I? Sitting up in the front office. In fact, he tells a story about how he caught me once sitting in his boss's desk, the big leather chair, typewriter and all that. And am I telling my dad, "I think this is where I want to be someday"? How profound, indeed. But the idea of did you think about becoming an engineer? And lo and behold, with my mother's support as well, I did explore what that might look like, and at a flip of a coin, went from deciding to go to art school instead went on to engineering school, which I then enjoyed a tremendous career for 25 years in automotive, aerospace, industrial equipment, and transportation equipment. I have to say, though, one of those visits home when I was in my professional phase of my life, it was probably in my late 20s, early 30s, I came home to see my youngest brother, who's still at home, David. And David says to me, he says, "You want to come and see my science fair project?" I said, "That'd be great." So I went downstairs. Again, I was a mechanical engineer, and it turns out my two other brothers also pursued mechanical engineering and ocean engineering. But what was David's science fair project on? Electrical circuits, the difference between series and parallel. And I can still see my dad kind of standing in the background with his arms crossed, this kind of smirk on his face, and my looking up to my dad saying, "You know, you are relentless. You want at least one double E out of this passel of kids, since the other three of us are mechanical." And he kind of shrugged it off. My point to that story is to let you know that my dad really never controlled or directed any of us. But he certainly did know how to influence and get the right information in front of us so we could make our own choices and our own decisions on life. My flip point with my father, and I think many of us have gone through this change of role with our parents at different points in time, came probably in my early 30s when one day my dad called me to ask for advice. And I can still remember where I was standing, what the phone booth was. I can even think I remember what I was wearing when that moment came, because I wasn't used to that happening. Usually it was my calling my dad for advice. He was being offered an early retirement from General Electric Medical Systems, and he really just didn't know what to do. It was coming a couple of years prior to when he was expecting it. And so he was saying, "What should I do?" And my sense of it was, is an reflection, what my dad loved to do was, while he did sell the high-end equipment, his real passion was helping the hospitals and the doctors do all the plant engineering and installation of that equipment, the electrical, the heating and air conditioning, their business systems, and so on. Because sales of those high-end equipments, that's a multi-year, quite frankly, a very high-pressure process. And I told him, I think at this point, if he didn't take the early out, that he was actually going to get more work if they were streamlining or shifting the sales force at that time. And so at a flip of a coin, he says, "You're absolutely right." And he said, "In fact, I think I'm going to start my own business doing the things that I used to do pro bono." And yes, indeed, that's what played forward, that my father then established DECM Corporation. He went on to have more fun, make more money, and have more freedom than he ever had in his corporate life. Albeit, though, based on the amazing relationships he had established with almost all the hospitals, not just through central Indiana, but probably the entire state. And so he put forward then a business model where he could have that kind of freedom and still be in the community of practice. He was around 53 or 54 years old when that happened. The other thing that happened in the state of Indiana is they recognized they hadn't been yet doing perhaps the kind of inspections they should on a regular basis of this equipment. You got it. My dad was the first man in line to get that license, and he went on then for the next 30 years to once a year visit probably 50 different locations, inspect, license, and correct, honestly, I think, equipment, sell, when. Part of that, though, is to moving that equipment now in used sense from hospitals to veterinary clinics, and he even took the opportunity to donate two systems to a mission hospital in Ghana. And so at age 73, there's my dad, much to the stress of us four kids, packing it up, taking his tools with him, recognizing there's no Home Depot out in the middle of nowhere in Africa to bring up those systems to help those mission hospitals. So he went on to do that. He found that solopreneur business. He absolutely passionately played to what came to him with greatest ease and grace and most fun. And by the way, it was a model then that my husband Ted picked up to start the Larson Group, and later for me to jettison from corporate America, do very much the same. By the way, I should mention that my dad did not ramp this business down until late last year at age 86. So he was still driving to Indiana from Illinois, where he'd moved to be near my brothers, to keep track of the hospitals and equipment, but also to be able to, as he would say, keep the company viable so he could charge his health care to the business. And in fact, during one of my visits with him in April, when he was failing, he leaned over amidst tapping and said, rather matter-of-factly, "Now, you do have a client here in Chicago, don't you? So you can charge this to a portion of your business?" Right. So, and in fact, I didn't that trip, but you better believe I did my next trip at my dad's encouragement. So, you know what? Honestly, if I do the genetic math here, I'll be 57 here. I'm proud of it. Coming up in December. That means maybe I've got another 30 years of this career thing based on my dad's legacy. Isn't that something to reflect upon? That's why you often hear me on this show refusing to use the R word, retirement. Instead, it's reimagine, re-envision, reinvigorate. Because quite honestly, for me, I'm only 50% done. What a thought. And think of the possibilities, albeit not the exhaustion. And I thank my father for that legacy. And I, by the way, I would say that my three brothers were all feeling that raising of the bar. You know, we did a lot of memory revisiting and memory making that can appear during these end-of-life transitions, and we certainly did a lot of that. I give my youngest brother David credit because he went and scooped up all the 8mm home movies that my dad had done over the years. This is from 1953 to 1980, so you can imagine this is a lot of you can run, but you can't hide data, and he had it made into 10 DVDs. I think not only did my dad and all of us relish those, but in particular my youngest brother, because he's 13 years younger than me, and he hadn't seen all of the scenes from those early childhood days, particularly watching, for example, older sis, because I am the oldest, with her arms crossed, bossing everybody around, or having a pout when I was given a doll at Christmas as opposed to a truck like my brothers. Well, we played those videos all together and during our dad's final days, running them 24/7 on the big screen. Of course, a lot of conversations during the first couple visits, but as it came to the close, it was more a thing to distract my father, perhaps, or just help ease him to a different place and bring him comfort, as well as us, for us kids. You can imagine what profound point it was for me at one point to be holding my dad and helping him ease forward, as I say, to only look past his shoulder, a segment of him holding me at age 3 or 4. We also had the next generation in the mix with our kids that came in and out during those period of time. In particular, a great memory of my nephew Eric coming over between 1 and 2:30 in the morning and filling us in. He'd been out with his buddies, of course, so why not swing by and see what else with grandpa and aunts or uncles or his own parents there in the middle of the night. And he filled me in on all his experience here as an upcoming sophomore in computational finance and economics at the University of Virginia in Darden. And what a lively, engaging conversation to see that light in his eyes and his passion of what he was into. And I encouraged Eric and made him realize that while he might not think my dad was listening, he was sitting there listening with all the same vim and vigor that he always did and probably taking in great delight that played forward. The times also, of course, of the process of helping Dad move from the big family home in Indianapolis, which, by the way, he took complete charge of, from the day that he said, I guess you're right, I probably should move to Illinois to be close to two other brothers. It took him another 2.5 years or so to wade through all this stuff and dispense it appropriately. He sent me some marvelous packages in the mail, one of which was my grandmother's sewing kit that I used to play with as a child. And when I took it apart, my daughter was kind of saying, Mom, what in the world are you looking at? And I said, you watch. I bet you if I slide open this one little drawer, there are 4 gold buttons in there that I, when I was about 4 or 5, I thought were real gold. I opened up that drawer, and indeed, there were the 4 gold buttons. So I know as well that my grandmother and grandfather, who now my father has rejoined in that great place in the sky, has also been traveling all the way through with us. The other package my father sent me, though, was a big box and weighed a lot. I opened it up, and oh my word, it was my high school notes from 1971 to 1975. I was afraid to even open the box further for what might have crawled in. I had no idea they were still in the attic. And when I called my dad to find out, Dad, you sent me my high school notes. And he said, oh yeah, I thought you might need them now. So there was the point in case you never know what was going to follow you through. He also sent me a package with a picture of our lake home that we had in Indiana, because I do want to set the record straight that it wasn't just about nose to the grindstone and hard work, that he and my mom invested in a wonderful cottage for a summer getaway, the kind that the kids never had to take off their bathing suit, never had television except for the moon shots and the moon landings. And we spent more time at the local library fishing or water skiing or digging up the dirt or playing with the trucks. So there was that element of also knowing to get away. Of course, my father continued putzing at that cottage all weekend long, fixing things that were go awry. But again, that was part of that family experience. My dad is going to be buried at sea very soon. Again, his legacy and time serving our country with the U.S. Navy. He also went on to be a blue and gold officer for the U.S. Naval Academy. In fact, I'll always remember the day when he absolutely almost couldn't button his shirt because it was the day my brother Mark was graduating from the academy. So it was a very big part of him. And wouldn't you know that after we said farewell to his remains there in Evanston by calling up the funeral home so they would take those steps forward, my brother Mark and I went over to the funeral home thinking that we might have some additional things we needed to wrap up and so on, only to find out that the manager said, "Oh, yes, we remember meeting your dad about 2.5 years ago. Let's pull out the file." Absolutely everything was in order, completely notarized, signed in the right sequence, such that Mark and I only had to place 2 signatures and walk out within 5 minutes. Another gift for my dad, that he had that much in order and knew and wanted us to know that we could let go. He's going to be buried at sea, which the way that that works is that our colleagues in the military will take his remains with them on some maneuver. We won't know when, but we do know that his last port of call is going to actually be the last port of call that he had back in 1956. He's going out of the Port of San Diego, and we will be notified when his remains are scattered by longitude and latitude and also be delivered a beautiful American flag that's folded. It's a great, great process. You know, these 6 weeks have been hard, but not about letting go. It's really about pulling in and being connected. To my dad, a man of kindness, generosity to others, and an innovator in every sense of the world, albeit sometimes a bit Rube Goldberg. I was in Los Angeles International Airport last week, and catching a flight, I did something that I never do, and that was I said, "I'm going to have an ice cream." And I walked up to the gate, or get to the kiosk there. Wouldn't you know, on the board, it said, "Our specialty, butter pecan ice cream." I broke down and bawled for probably about 5 minutes because that was my dad's favorite ice cream. But I got to tell you, I stood right up and said, "Why don't you give me 2 scoops? Because I know he wants to enjoy it with me." Godspeed, Dad.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.